State Senator Mary Lasnik represents the 28th Senate District. She served in the Assembly from 1993 to 1998 when she was elected to the State Senate, but she made history on January 5th when she became the first woman president of the Wisconsin State Senate. Congratulations, Senator, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you, Steve. It's very nice to be with you today.
The transition from being, well, it's important to be a member, just a member of the Senate, to be the presiding officer. How did you go to school on that transition, Senator?
Well, it was very interesting. I didn't have plans, or I have to say even aspirations, to be the president. However, last session when we saw our farm system, we saw Mike Ellis and Joe Lipum and Neil Kedzie all go off the cliff, so to speak, I looked around and thought, you know, I can do this and I want to do this. So I set out and worked very hard to gain the support of my colleagues and was successful. And so I'm very pleased to be serving as the Senate president. As I came in the first few days learning what goes on, I really like it. I like the position. I like doing it. And of course, I can't do it without the support of my colleagues. And I have to say, I have absolutely wonderful colleagues this session. We have new Republican senators, and they all come in. I know them from working with them in the field. They come over from the Assembly. They're very bright people, very energetic. So the team that we have, I think, is probably the best team that I've served with since I've been in the legislature. As a whole, I've served with a lot of wonderful people. But this group of senators, I think we're a lot of the same ilk, and I think we're going to do a great job. And so I really look forward to working together with them, to coming to conclusions on a lot of the things that are before us and that will be before us.
How do you see the role of Senate President? Because as we talked earlier, it's a completely different job, isn't it?
Yes.
Presiding officer, parliamentary procedures. Well, just talk about your new role.
It is a transition, and I talked about when I walked into the building on January 5th of 2015 versus walking into the building all the times I've walked into it over the years, that it was an immensely different feeling, an immensely different responsibility. I've always been the maverick senator from the 28th, and I will continue to vigorously represent my constituents. But I walked in with a whole new responsibility and a whole new respect for the agency, or excuse me, for the institution. And I've heard people say that over the years and talk about this institution. And I always saw it as this doorway I went through to work for my constituents and to fight tooth and nail to represent them, mm-hmm. and take home their issues to them. And when I walk in now, I still have that role, and I still feel that that's a very important role. But I have this expanded role, which I'm very ready for after doing this for these many years, and the sense of responsibility to the institution, the sense of responsibility of working with the Assembly, working with the governor, working with the senators, the majority leader, the sense of making it all happen on the floor and happen in a respectful manner. Everyone should be heard, and my position firmly is that everyone, both Republican and Democrat, particularly the Democrats, that their voice should be heard. Their message should be known by everyone in the state. So I really strive for that as my overall goal, that when the session is done, people will look back at the session and realize that the voices were heard, that the people of Wisconsin have a great understanding of the philosophies of both party, both the Democrat and the Republican. So my job is to forward the Republican agenda, mm-hmm. and I will do that. But my job also is to make sure that the Democrats' viewpoint is well understood by the people of the state of Wisconsin.
Because you've served long enough to know what it's like to not be the controlling party, correct? So your memory helps you there.
I know of many times that I have felt stifled on the floor, and I do not ever want someone to feel stifled. On the other hand, we do have to methodically move through things,
yes.
But I think that can happen. I think that can happen in a very organized fashion.
The right to work debate, which just happened last week, was really your first crucible. You had a packed gallery, you had protesters, you had to deal with their shouts of disruptions. I was struck that you pretty methodically said, bang, we're not gonna have that. This is the second warning. I think you said, I don't wanna have to clear the gallery.
Yes.
Were you ready to clear the gallery? Had you discussed that with the police officers in the gallery, Senator?
We always have to have security measures in mind. We also always have to be mindful of the safety. You know, my main issue is the safety of the Senate, and then, of course, the safety of the message getting out to the people. So as I monitor the floor and as I manage that presiding, I want to be sure that the public hears. The public hears what the members are saying. That's very, very important. And when the gallery disrupts and interferes with that message, mm-hmm. that's what's very, very problematic. So through the day, there were times where I had to silence the gallery, and unfortunately, some disruptive people had to be removed. And that's very unfortunate because they lose, we all lose. That's not a good thing. You like to have everyone sit there quietly, be attentive, listen, be, they want to be participatory in their government, and their role on the days that we are on the floor to be participatory is to be there listening and be and then take away the message that they choose to take away from listening to the debate. And as that goes along and works out well, that's a great thing. But what was very unfortunate is way at the end when we adjourned, yes. it was so disruptive. It was so terribly, terribly disruptive that the members, both Democrat and Republican, can't hear what's going on. And you have to somehow, make your way through that. And I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen. So hopefully in the future we can have days where we don't have those disruptions.
It seemed to me that you were ready to close the gallery, to clear the gallery, excuse me, but I got the idea you weren't going to do it. Is that a fair summary?
What happened when we had the first two disruptions, mm-hmm. which I was very surprised at, that right off the bat when the majority leader's speaking, someone gets up and disrupts, that took me aback a little bit. I was surprised at that. So then we removed that person, and I thought, okay, the gallery, so to speak, or a person has made their opening statement, and now we'll move on. Well, when it happened right away a second time, to me it sounded like, how do I take this? Is there a planned methodology where every 3 minutes someone is going to interrupt? Well, the majority leader, not only deserves to be heard, but my role in presiding is to make sure that he is heard. So at that point, I didn't know if there was an orchestrated measure, and that's when I made the very very firm call that if this continues, I will clear this gallery, because you can't interrupt the majority leader every third sentence. That's not going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Well, at that point, everyone settled down and no one interrupted him again, and he finished. So then I thought that was good, that the gallery was, as a whole, being respectful, and that we could proceed. So was I prepared to, had they kept interrupting our first speaker, the majority leader? Yeah, we would have had to clear it, and that would have been awful because it's disruptive, it's time-consuming, and then there probably would have been more outbursts and all that. So we don't want that to happen, but, was I prepared, and am I prepared to do that? Yes, absolutely, we're going to have to. But they did behave, and then after that, there was a small disruption here and there, and we, had to have, I think, two or three more people removed, so.
Right. You've been a partisan passing governor's changes and his agenda for 5 years. Pretty aggressive agenda. But now we're at a point where the solidarity singers over the noon hour, and you and I just heard a shout against Governor Walker. Is the heightened voices good as someone who's been a part of the assembly and then the Senate since 1993? What type of era are we in now where the voices are so much louder there's more confrontation?
Well, times have certainly changed. When I came on board in 93, we were on the edge of technology. We as legislators, social media didn't exist just yet. Technology was coming into our offices. We were coming into the email era. Mm-hmm. And we have moved so far from that technology is at our fingertips and there's instant communication with anyone, anywhere, at a moment's notice. And that has really changed the dynamic a lot of the way we function. And then in terms of these recent years with Governor Walker and the initiatives that have happened, it has been a lot happening in a short amount of time in terms of the changes that we've made. I think all things considered, we've moved through them very well. I think in terms of when I reflect back on Act 10 and reflect back on the emotions of people and the numbers of people that filled the Capitol, and I jump from from Act 10 to today and look at that in a reflective moment, I think it's amazing that it was as peaceful as it was and that no one was injured physically, that we got through that. So I think that's a good thing. In terms of the people speaking, I think that a lot of robust conversation is very important to our society. I think it's very, very healthy to our institutions and to government to have that cacophony of noise. A lot of times we get frustrated at election time that there's just so much noise and people want to stifle that noise. And, you know, I understand that. I get that. It's not always fun to listen to. But I think in our society it's so important that people have that freedom to speak and to make those viewpoints. And social media really provides a vast opportunity to do that.
Is there one incident from the Act 10 debate that changed how you do your job? Is there one point where you were threatened or your family was threatened that really changed how you do your job going forth, Senator?
There were a lot of very serious threats back during Act 10. I think each and every person, senator, probably had their moment where it was very scary, very dangerous. But you move forward. And when you're in the thick of it, I don't think it registers as quickly as when you're reflecting back a day or two later, particularly in the Capitol when things would happen or my staff would tell me this or that communication or some such. You have so much going on and it's so intense that you have to deal with a lot of things very quickly. So you kind of move past it, you make a quick decision, do this, and you move past it. But then in retrospect, you reflect and you realize how dangerous a situation it might have been and mm-hmm. how blessed and fortunate we were to have gone through the whole thing and get to where we are today. But yes, there were pivotal moving moments when my family felt threatened, when my children became alarmed, and when they, I didn't like that. That crossed the line. That crossed the line when they became frightened. And of course, they're sitting home seeing it on TV.
Yes.
And, you know, the danger, very sensationalized, where I would say, it's not, you know, it's not quite that bad. I'm getting in and out okay. We have security. We have protection. And I will be very mindful. You know, I'm not going to put myself in a situation and get hurt. So, you know, we will get through this.
Which of all the major changes that you've been a part of since Governor Walker took office are you proudest of?
I think in total, in whole, I'm very proud of everything we've done in terms of the district that I come from is very supportive of Governor Walker. I've known Governor Walker for a long, long time. We carpooled way back in the days, and I reflect back on a lot of the things that we're doing, how we talked about those things in just casual conversation way back in the day when we were both very maverick young legislators. We talked about all of these things, and as I see them playing out, I smile and reflect on the words he used, you know, back in the day when we talked about those things as powerless freshman legislators, and I see it playing out. But when I see it play out and I see the decisions I've made, and as I say, I'm a huge fan of Walker. I've known him all these years since we were both freshmen. It really is the totality. It's doing the things and having the people come back via the recalls and say, at minimum, they're saying, this is okay and we want this to continue. Some will say they really like this because of the returning him to office so many times and that Republicans are in control of both the Assembly and the Senate, that the people of Wisconsin are very enamored and pleased with what's going on. So I think those types of things in totality, where we're moving, I feel like we're moving Wisconsin forward in a good way. Budgets, you know, Washington's a disaster. And why? Because they've abandoned all sense of fiscal responsibility. And I think Wisconsin sits here and takes a lesson from that, particularly the Republican legislature, that we cannot abandon fiscal responsibility. We must make that number one. We must balance our budgets. We must be frugal with our dollar. We must not ask too much of the taxpayers. They pay plenty of taxes, and the taxes that they do pay, we must manage wisely. We must take safety into account. We must educate children. Those very important things, health care for those that are very needy, those types of things we take very seriously. And you have a Republican legislature that takes those things seriously and wants to make Wisconsin a good state, but also realizes that the business climate is so very important for us to be able to do those basic services. We have to have a good business climate. We have to have thriving people thriving at jobs and good schools, good family units. That's what makes Wisconsin great.
Before I ask about four specific budget issues, one more thing about the transition to Senate President. Did you get any advice from former Senate Presidents Ellis or Rood or Risser?
I especially,
you remember the photo that went viral of Senator Ellis pointing, sit down, you remember that?
Yes.
Did you take a vow to not have run the Senate in a way that a similar image of you could be captured?
Well, I've taken a vow, and I've invited in every senator, both Republican and Democrat, to come in and sit down and have a personal conversation with me. And I tell them all the same thing. You know, at the end of the day, when this session completes, I would like us all to walk off the floor and feel like it was a good process. I would like to leave the floor intact with dignity. And the way we do that is that everyone is heard. So the Republicans, make their claims. The Democrats make their claim. The Democrats will talk more, just as we did with Right to Work. We give them the floor and have them speak. So when we walk out of here in 2 years, the legacy that I'd certainly want to leave is that I was fair, and that they were able to get their message to the public.
Okay, now let's talk about some specific issues. Senator Nass announced yesterday that he's not going to vote for the governor's proposal to give the UW system the authority and the autonomy to govern itself. Do you have a position on that issue?
Well, it's very interesting. Last session, when this issue came up, when the UW wanted some flexibility and there was some conversation about it, I was a big fan of giving them flexibility, a big fan. And one of the reasons I was a very big fan is we had a chancellor at La Crosse that I happened to sit next to at a dinner one time a few years back, and he told me about all the things that he would like to do, but he was so hamstrung and couldn't do it. And I says, well, I would certainly be one that would want to help you pilot these things. Let's let La Crosse pilot these things, and we can learn from them. You can teach us what's good and we should do and what maybe doesn't work out so great. Well, unfortunately, what happened, or fortunately for him, he moved on to Carroll University, and he gets to do all those things there.
Yeah, running a private school.
Do those wonderful things that he sat and told me about. And we have a lot of constraints on the university system. So last session, I was a big fan of it. Well, then, after I'm a big fan of it, and here comes out, they have these
surplus
in reserve funds, these $1 billion. You know, you feel kicked in the gut, and you feel like, someone saved me from myself, that I didn't support something like that. Well, it comes along now, and now I think that given the history, given that we wanted to do some flexibility last time, given that a lot of funds were exposed, and we were very glad we didn't give flexibility to an agency that's obviously pretty irresponsible or not open with us, it's very problematic. Well, then, of course, we send the audit bureau in there and we do the audits. So the flexibility they're looking for now, I'm willing to talk about. Okay. I'm certainly not as big of a fan of it after what happened with the $1 billion reserves laying around that we were unaware of. That's not okay. That is not okay. And I think, too, there is a lot of waste in the system. They really have to do some things to tighten up on a lot that goes on over there. But I'm very willing to talk about some flexibilities and what those flexibilities are. And then on the other side, what kind of accountability measures we have in place that we can very quickly pull the string if we need to. Not where we say, oh, here's flexibility, go off, come back next budget time, let's see how you did. Because they've proven not to be 100% trustworthy, we need to have a string we can pull in an instant.
Would a cap on tuition make you more likely to vote for the governor's plan?
Cap on tuition. I think Wisconsin's tuition rates are decent. I had children in the university system, one at Madison. It's a good education for the price that you pay. It's supposed to be a desirable place to go. It has its faults, especially having someone there. I have a firsthand concern about some of its faults. But in terms of where to go with it, mm-hmm. I think there has to be discussions among legislators. As you have just stated, there's someone that has taken a claim. They're very against it. I'm very willing to listen. I'm very willing to do some pilot things. In terms of tuition, I think that the out-of-state tuition is, when we have such a demand for our school, I don't think it's unreasonable to increase the out-of-state tuition at all. And I think that should be looked at because it's quite the bargain as you look at other states across the country, other universities that are desirable. We still have a reasonable out-of-state tuition.
The governor's proposed $300 million cut in state aid over 2 years, and it's important to say over 2 years. Do you think that's too deep a cut, Senator?
Given what's happened in the last few years, no, that is not too deep a cut. Okay. It is not too deep a cut.
Okay. Yesterday, Governor Walker asked that the Senate and the Assembly send him a bill that would ban abortions after 20 weeks. This issue has been a priority with you. Is it fair to say you're working on a bill like that and will be part of the process that you hope puts that bill on his desk, Senator?
Yes. I was very pleased to hear the governor's comments that he's interested in that bill. And that bill is all about pain. We look at the science, and it's the pain inflicted on the child. You know, many years ago, way back to Roe v. Wade, the science, the technology, the information just wasn't available. And were that information available today, would there be a different decision? I tend to think there would be a different decision. And the more that that information, and as we talked about at the beginning of our conversation here, the readily available information now and the science that's available, you can't argue too much with the hard science. And that makes a huge difference. So it's all about inflicting pain on mm-hmm. someone. That's what that bill is about.
Do you plan to be the lead sponsor in the Senate,
Senator? Yes, we're working on it.
And the timing of a potential Senate vote prior to the budget or fall session? Or?
Well, there's a lot of things on our plate. And I tend to think there's a lot that we, as legislators that aren't on the Joint Finance Committee, need to get done now while Joint Finance Committee is very busy and very much in the thick of things. They're going to go out and do their road show, take the public hearing on the road, yep. and have everyone listen to that. So while they're doing that, we have a lot of legislators sitting in the Capitol here that are working on a lot of legislation. So it's a very good time to work on a lot of these things before us. How long it takes to get everything ready for the floor remains to be seen. There's work to do.
Third budget issue, the governor's proposal for a so-called his term jock tax to contribute, to underwrite $220 million in bonds for a new downtown Bucks Arena. Do you support that?
Well, the devil's going to be in the details there. When the governor, the day the governor laid it out, I listened to it, and the governor says, what's not to like about this? You know, we'll take any increased revenue from the players, that'll be used to pay the debt. Okay, well, that seems like a win-win if we... the only cost to us is really no cost because it's pretty much like a TIF district. A TIF district, you take the property value increase mm-hmm. and you use that to pay off the TIF. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very much a TIF district, but instead of using the property tax to pay it off, you're using the income tax, this rise in income. So it seems like, this could be a win-win. But I think what's very important there is getting a Fiscal Bureau paper on that, because do the numbers work that well? Will that increase in revenue actually pay off the bonds? And I think there's a lot of discussion that is still out there as it relates to that. But importantly to me, I look for that Fiscal Bureau paper because is that a reality? Will that increase in player revenue pay it off? So there will not be a penny coming out of the taxpayer's pocket, because I do not support that at all. And in order to make that work, my sense at this point is the Fiscal Bureau paper is going to present a picture that, you know, maybe isn't as nice as we'd like it to be in terms of the players' increase in salary being able to pay off that debt, that I think others have to come to the table. There's got to be more at the table contributing. So where we get that, there's conversation about the city contributing, the county contributing, a little more out of those owners, especially when we see the Forbes list here in these recent days.
Yes.
So I don't think we can put this bill. I definitely do not think and would not support putting this bill on a taxpayer that's really struggling to come out of the recession. We are working so hard to build this state and build the incomes of people for themselves to recover personally from the recession when they've taken a hit and they've got some debt from that recession and are still experiencing the recovery from having lost a job, taking on a new job, whatever that is. So I don't find it in my heart to have them spring money when it's a very, very tight time. And, you know, back in the day of of Miller Park. I was probably only one in the area that said, no, we can't take this money from the taxpayers. So I do not support taking a penny from the taxpayers. I think it has to be put together in some other way.
You talked about being fiscally prudent. The governor's recommended, as you know, $1.3 billion in bonding to pay for our next 2 years of transportation programs. You and I have just been watching the Joint Finance Committee to kick that around. What's your reaction to bonding at additional bonding at that level for transportation?
My sense at this point, from what I've heard from other senators in the conversation, is that there is not going to be support for that level of bonding. When we look at the trajectory of the cost, what we have to pay in debt and the bonds, you know, that is a collision course, and we cannot continue to do that. We cannot.
Are you willing then to raise the gas tax, to raise the $75 that you and I pay to register our vehicles? Because as we just heard in finance, there's some tough choices out there.
There's choices out there. But you know, Steve, there's always some increased revenue. There's some increased transportation revenue in this budget. As time goes on, there's always a little bit more revenues. They just aren't what they are now. I often reflect on the 90s. The 90s were just fantastic. People were working. Income tax was high. Sales tax was high. We were flush with revenues. We could give you programs, and cut your taxes. I mean, it was the heyday for everyone. It was the heyday for the population. It was the heyday for government being able to do all these things. And then the turn of the decade there, and everything just comes crashing down on us. So, you know, that comes crashing down, then we have the housing bubble, you know, and it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. And I thank the Lord for the legislature that we have now that can step up to the plate and say, we do not have a whole lot of dollars to spend. We have a constituency that's trying to recover, and we need to be responsible. So we need to think about that. We have a lot of wonderful roads in Wisconsin already built. We have great roads. You can get from here to there. Some of them need repair. Would it be great to build all kinds of new roads? Sure. But do we have the money? So there has to be a reality check of what we can afford. I think maintenance is immensely important. Let's salvage the roads that we have. We have a lot of very good roads. Let's take very good care of them. Southeastern Wisconsin, it's lanes. It's traffic jams and lanes, and we need to add lanes. And some of the roads need to be rebuilt because they're so very old. Mm-hmm. So it's maintenance things. So when it comes to building new roads, and I don't know that I'm at that table as much as I'm at the table to take care of the roads that we have right now. Maintenance and adding some lanes where traffic counts demand that we add lanes. I think those are the priorities.
The co-chairman of finance today asked the transportation secretary, what would happen if the governor's recommendation to bond at $1.3 billion was cut by $500 million back to $800 million? Is that a position that you've been asked to consider as part of the budget, Senator?
I haven't been put in a position to take a position. At this point, what I know is that we need to be mindful of our expenditures, we need to be mindful of our credit card, and we as legislators need to sit down at the table and have conversations about this and figure out how we sharpen our pencil and how we spend the meager, relatively speaking, resources we have at this point to the best use. So what those numbers are, I think those conversations need to be had now as Joint Finance works through this. And what those answers are today, I don't know those answers. And as President of the Senate and someone that wants to help coalesce and build coalitions and get this budget through, you know, we need to have those conversations.
How do you respond when Democrats and others who have fought the governor's changes that you voted for over the last 5 years say two things? It's been a war on women, and a war on unions. How do you answer those?
Oh, no, no. I would say that is not an accurate assessment at all. Not at all. The laws that we have treat men and women equally. I don't think there's anything here that's been... I don't know if anybody defines the war on women. What is the war on women? And secondly,
The unions.
The union issue.
War on unions. Both
very,
public
very
sector
much,
and now private with the right to work. Excuse me.
Very, very much for me, it's the individual's right. There's a lot of people out there that, you know, love their union, want their union, and that's great. We're not taking that away. They can continue that relationship. There's businesses that like the relationship they have, workers that like the relationship. Bless it, that relationship can continue. We aren't going there. But in terms of the person that feels stifled, that feels not wanting the forced unionization, that's what this is about. It's giving them that option.
You've been known as a passionate fighter. I think the angriest I heard you was in the Act 10 debate when you refused to let Senator Urbanbach vote by phone. Are you going to temper your passion for your issues and your causes as president, Senator?
Well, as president, it's a whole different role. So in terms of being, as I say, that maverick senator from the 28th, that they know me well, they know my positions. My positions on issues have not changed at all over the years. I will continue those passionate positions. But in terms of president, when I'm up there in the chair as the president, my job is to make sure that the Democrats are heard, and I want them to be heard. I want the people of the state of Wisconsin to know what their positions are and know what they have to say. I think that's very important.
Just two final questions. Thanks for the time. Is there anything else on your priorities for this session that we haven't talked about?
I think you've covered them really well, Steve. Those are the things that are in front of us now. Those are the things that we discuss daily, that we think about daily, and that we have to reach solutions on.
And then finally, if one of your grandchildren came to you and said, I'd like to enter politics, what advice would you give she or he?
Quite the thing I would need to think about. That I would say, are you sure you want to do this? Let me tell you what it entails. Let me tell you what it involves. And does it suit your personality? Does it suit your lifestyle? How much passion do you have for it? If you have an immense amount of passion and you really want to do this, I am right there to help you campaign. But think about your whole life. Think about your career. Think about your profession. And make those decisions without haste.
Do you see yourself as a history maker, or did you break a glass ceiling being the first woman Senate president?
I don't know that I broke a glass ceiling. I really wanted the position. There was a point in time, and as I say, I never aspired to this. There was just a point in time where I saw Mike, Neil, and Joe all walk off a cliff, and I looked around at my colleagues and said, somebody needs to do this, and I think it's me. And so at that point, I just aggressively went out and worked with my colleagues to gain their support, and was fortunate enough to get that support.
Senate President Mary Lassick, thank you so much for talking to Wisconsin Eye. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.